live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, July 12, 2019. Coming up this hour,
trade tensions with China resurface as President Trump takes to Twitter.
Weak data out of Singapore sends a warning to the global economy.
The Fed stays in focus as remarks from Jay Powell rub up against stronger inflation.
People across the Gulf Coast prepare for Tropical Storm Barry. Plus, President Trump retreats on efforts to add a citizenship question to the census. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buschke. Coming up in sports, it's an iconic battle this morning at Wimbledon. The Yankees and Mets return to action, and superstars trade places out west in the NBA.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are gaining as we head into the final trading day of the week. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And S&P futures are up about 8 points this morning. Dow futures up 95. NASDAQ futures up 25. The DAX in Germany, little changed. CAC in Paris up 0.6%. And the FTSE 100 is up 0.3%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.2%. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 2.13%. And the yield on the two-year, 1.85%. COMEX gold up 0.1%, up $1.20 to $14.07.80 an ounce. The euro, 1.1258 against the dollar. The yen, 108.43. Nathan.
Karen, trade tensions between the U.S. and China are resurfacing as President Trump complains Beijing hasn't increased its purchases of American farm products following the trade truce at last month's G20. We get more from Bloomberg's Sarah McGregor.
Out of this Trump-Xi meeting, we really didn't get a lot of details. One of the few things that Trump told us is that China had apparently agreed to buy more U.S. agricultural goods. The data shows Chinese agriculture purchases from the U.S. have actually dipped since that meeting. And, you know, we have Trump himself questioning whether China's really committed to increasing those purchases.
However, China's not confirming whether it agreed to buy U.S. farm products at that meeting in Osaka. Bloomberg's Selena Wang reports from Beijing.
What we're hearing is that they claim they didn't make any specific commitments to buy more agricultural purchases and that this was contingent on how the talks progressed. At the same time, we're also hearing from the Ministry of Commerce here in Beijing that talks will restart, but on the basis of mutual equality and respect. And the assumption is that when Trump makes tweets like this, it doesn't really help that cause that China is hoping for to be on this level playing field.
Data this morning show China's export growth slowed in June and imports shrank more than expected as the trade war and global slowdown hurt trade.
China wasn't the only target for President Trump overnight. He also lashed out at Facebook's push into digital currency, saying the company must seek a banking charter if its proposed Libra currency hopes to have any standing. Bloomberg's Eric Lamb has more.
In his tweet, he also took a bit of a swipe at cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin in general. He says that their value is very volatile and basically is created out of thin air. In terms of his criticisms for Facebook, I think it does come in line with some of the wider issues that lawmakers overall have been talking about. And as one politician notes, if we are not able to trust Facebook for our private data, are we able to trust Facebook for our money? And that's a question that Facebook is going to have to answer.
Market reaction to the president's tweet was muted, with Bitcoin little change from its level before his remarks. Right now, it's at $11,663.
The risk asset rally got a fresh boost from Jerome Powell again yesterday.
Central banks around the world are seeing weakness everywhere, and they're also providing more accommodation. We've signaled that we're open to doing that, and you're seeing that in the curve now. You're seeing that embedded in the United States interest rate curve.
And now traders are pitting the Fed chairman's dovish remarks against yesterday's strong inflation data. And two regional Fed presidents are pushing back against the certainty of a rate cut this month. Richmond Fed Chief Tom Barkin.
We have a lot of time left before the meeting. We'll see what happens. We'll have a lot of data that comes in. And markets are smart, so if the data ends up with a different kind of outcome, the markets will, I'm sure, adjust.
Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic also says he's skeptical of the need to cut rates. In the other camp, we have New York Chief John Williams and board member Lyle Brainard, who say there's a good case for easing. Minneapolis Fed President Neel Kashkari wants to take it even further.
I don't think a one cut, 25 basis point cut by itself is going to do very much to re-anchor inflation expectations. I think we need a little bit more of a stronger punch, and that's why I advocated for a 50 basis point cut.
And despite that view from Kashkari, traders pulled back bets on a half-point cut after yesterday's strong CPI print.
Oil is headed for its biggest weekly gain in the 3 weeks as tensions in the Middle East and a tropical storm in the Gulf of Mexico threaten supply. Tropical Storm Barry has already curbed about half of the Gulf's energy output. Mark Rossano is CEO of C6 Capital Holdings.
There's a twofold play. One, you're going to have a drop in demand just because people aren't going to drive. You have 12 inches of rain falling, and you're going to have some of that slowdown, but you're also going to miss a certain amount of ship traffic. So you're going to have that balance where you're going to lose some oil, but you're also going to lose some demand, so they should be a bit more of a transitory event.
Checking oil now, NYMEX crude is up 0.3% or 19 cents at $60.39 a barrel, and Brent is up 0.6% or 42 cents to $66.94.
In Singapore, an unexpected contraction in GDP is sending a warning shot across the bow of the global economy. Second quarter GDP shrank 3.4%, missing forecasts for a 0.5% expansion. Bloomberg's Mark Cranfield has more from Singapore.
Singapore is a very open economy. It's a very good indicator about where global trade flows are going. So when something like that happens in Singapore, other countries are probably shuddering, thinking it could be us in the next quarter ahead. So certainly an indicator that goes way beyond Singapore. It might be a relatively small country, but it has implications for much bigger countries across Asia, that's for sure.
Meanwhile, in Asia, it was a muted session for stocks today. We get a recap from Bloomberg's David Inglis in Hong Kong.
Nathan and Karen, equities in Singapore, and let's begin there, having just talked about those latest GDP numbers, to some extent actually shrugging off the data with the Straits Times Index closing higher for a third day, but still lower for the week, though. And what we did see there in Singapore is fairly reflective of the equity session this Friday across the Asia Pacific, where the benchmark relatively flat and unscathed for the day, but certainly lower if you measure it from Friday of last week, the MSCI Asia Pacific snapping essentially a five-week run. In Hong Kong, I'm David Inglis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, David, thank you. And S&P futures are up 8.5 points this morning. Dow futures up 98 and Nasdaq futures up 28. The 10-year treasury, little change. The yield 2.13% and the yield on the 2-year 1.85%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 6:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to find out what else is happening in the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Critics who argue that a census question about citizenship would discourage minority and migrant participation have won their fight to block it. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports President Trump says he'll try another way.
It was a rare retreat for the president, even as he insisted he was standing his ground.
I'm here to say we are not backing down on our effort to determine the citizenship status of the United States population.
Trump then went on to capitulate on the more than year-long effort to include the question, offering a face-saving plan to estimate using government data. After losing in the Supreme Court, he blamed meritless litigation and opponents who aren't proud Americans.
People who are not proud to be citizens are the ones who are fighting us all the way about the word citizen.
The Justice Department is dropping the matter in courts where legal challenges have been pending. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Wind and rain from Tropical Storm Barry are starting to hit Louisiana as New Orleans and coastal communities brace for what is expected to be the first hurricane of the season. A hurricane warning is in effect along the Louisiana coast, and forecasters said the storm could make landfall as a hurricane by early Saturday. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
This is going to be a major weather event for a huge portion of the state of Louisiana.
The storm's rains are expected to pose a severe test of New Orleans' post-Katrina flood defenses. Former Vice President Joe Biden still leads the Democratic field in the race for the White House, but according to an NBC Wall Street Journal poll, Senator Elizabeth Warren is gaining ground. The poll shows Biden at 26%, Warren at 19%, with Senators Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders tied with 13%. Germany's economy minister sees a 50% chance of the European Union striking a trade agreement on industrial goods with the U.S. possibly this year. Talks between the EU and the U.S. on a trade deal have been stalled as Europe rejects America's calls to include farm products in a deal. Singer R. Kelly has been arrested in Chicago on a federal grand jury indictment listing 13 counts, including sex crimes and obstruction of justice. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Good morning, Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Yankees and Mets both return to action on Friday as the second half officially underway. Yankees host the Blue Jays, Aaron Sanchez and Domingo Herman. Yankees lead the East by 6.5 over Tampa Bay, 9 over Boston. Mets are in Miami to meet the Marlins, Jason Vargas and Caleb Smith. Thursday's lone game found Texas blanking Houston 5-0. Lance Lynn becomes baseball's first 12-game winner. Wimbledon, Serena Williams cruised in straight sets again, this time into Saturday's final against familiar foe and former world number one Simona Halep.
Obviously her tenacity, I think her ability to improve every time, you know, and just to keep improving. Her ability to find power and just can't underestimate her. She's like a little powerhouse.
Men's action on Friday, Novak Djokovic battles Spain's Roberto Bautista Agut at 8 Eastern, followed by Titans Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer at 10:30. The men's final is Sunday. In a blockbuster deal in the NBA, once again it's out west as point guards trade places. Oklahoma City sending Russell Westbrook to Houston in exchange for Chris Paul. The Rockets will send Paul 2 first-round picks and 2 pick swaps in 2021 and 2025 to the Thunder. Westbrook and James Harden, both league MVPs, reunited. They begin their careers together in OKC. And the Knicks continue to reshape their roster as Marcus Morris backed out of his 2-year deal with San Antonio. This 1-year, $15 million contract for Morris in New York has the team right at the salary cap. New York still has just under $5 million exemption available and 14 players on guaranteed contracts. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, Rob, thank you. And please join us tonight for the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. We speak with Jeff Quadnitz, founder and CEO of Big Three, the three-on-three basketball league also created by rapper-actor Ice Cube. You can catch that interview tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. on Bloomberg Radio or subscribe to the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. S&P futures up 7.5 points. Dow futures up 91. NASDAQ futures up 26 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by Bernstein Medical. Losing your hair? Learn how Bernstein Medical uses your own hair to create natural, permanent results. Explore BernsteinMedical.com or visit their Manhattan Center. Bernstein Medical, a world leader in robotic hair transplants.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is 6:17 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check at the latest headlines with Hannah George at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Karen. Oil's facing the double threat of rising stockpiles and Tropical Storm Barry. Almost 20% of U.S. refining capacity is potentially in the hurricane's path. Trade data from China looks pretty dire. Imports slid a worse than expected 7.3% year-on-year, while exports fell 1.3%. AB InBev's Asian unit is struggling to price its $9.8 billion IPO. Sources say it may postpone the offering and change the terms. And President Erdogan is defying the US when it comes to weapons from Russia. The lira weakened after Turkey received its first shipment of parts for a missile defense system that's alarming NATO members. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen.
All right, Hannah, thank you. S&P futures are up 7 points this morning. Dow futures up 89. NASDAQ futures up 25. The DAX in Germany, little change. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 2.13%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.86%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.3% or 21 cents at $60.41 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.90 to $14.08.60 an ounce. The euro 1.1260 against the dollar. The yen 108.41. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. More on Tropical Storm Barry. The Louisiana Gulf Coast is bracing for heavy rainfall as the storm continues to slowly spin in the Gulf of Mexico. The main concern with the storm system is widespread flooding. President Donald Trump issued an executive order directing the Commerce Department to obtain citizenship data through means other than the U.S. Census. The president dropped a controversial plan to include a citizenship question on the 2020 census after the Supreme Court blocked it. At Wimbledon, Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer will go at it in today's semifinals. Novak Djokovic faces Roberto Bautista Agut. Serena Williams and Simona Halep will face each other in the women's final tomorrow. Major League Baseball resumes in earnest tonight after the All-Star break. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. We're coming up to 6:20 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Taking a look at the markets this morning with Paul Dobson, Bloomberg's Managing Editor for European Markets. Paul, let's start on your side of the pond. We just got some stronger than expected industrial production data out of Europe this morning. Does that complicate the situation for the European Central Bank as it's considering adding more stimulus?
Well, absolutely. Just as everybody thought that the economy couldn't get any worse, it starts to look better. But the problem is that the European Central Bank is only just adjusting to a weaker outlook and talking about the possibility of injecting more stimulus into the economy, all of which has been whiplashing the bonds markets in Europe quite dramatically in recent days. We had record low yields at the start of the week. And now we're in the midst of a pretty brutal sell-off that's pushed yields around 20 basis points or even more higher across the European curve, a sea of red there today.
So you could see more volatility in the European bond market. I mean, it's been negative yield, the story, for a bit here at least.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's kind of part of the whole issue. We've started to see some extremely peculiar names popping up with negative yields, those that mean that you get back less than you've lent out, basically. So, you know, European junk bonds with negative yields, or those from Eastern Europe as well with negative yields. Feels like, you know, maybe the things have gone too fast, and that unsettled some investors or lent them to think that we were at the end of the story, at least for now, leading to some profit taking, particularly in the higher yielding parts of Europe, Portugal, Spain, Italy, where we've had a particularly strong rally over the first 6 or 7 months of this year.
What about corporate debt in Europe? Does that change given the stronger data this morning?
Well, I mean, Europe has had just fantastic funding conditions now for a good few months. And in fact, international issuers are also looking to sell their bonds denominated in euros to take advantage of that. One of the more surprising names that came out just yesterday was Togo, looking to sell bonds that would have been equivalent to something like 10% of the country's GDP denominated in euros to capture those extremely generous terms. We're on course for a record year in terms of euro issuance. Companies, you know, in a very favorable position, and that's really helping to fuel a rally in the equity market as well, making borrowing terms so much easier for those companies.
I know you're watching U.S. sovereign debt as well. A very interesting market there with Fed Chairman Powell's comments coming on the heels of stronger than expected inflation data in the U.S.
Exactly. So again, we've been whipped backwards and forwards in the Treasuries market in the past few days. Powell reassured the market that a cut was definitely coming for this month, and even reinvigorated some of those bets for a 50 basis point cut as soon as July, and gave the market hope that we were at the start of a cutting cycle rather than something like an insurance cut or a one and done move. Problem is, then that inflation data came out ahead of expectations and kind of cut that bond rally off at the knees. So interestingly, going nowhere very fast in Treasuries today, despite the extra ructions in Europe. So we'll see whether they can hold their ground here after what's been a rather turbulent week.
So do you think the 10-year yield has topped out at this point, or does it have more room to run?
I think that there are a number of reasons that investors would want to remain bullish on Treasuries, even at these levels. For one, you know, the yield premium that it has over the rest of the world. If you're looking for a safe asset with a positive yield, there's nowhere better than the U.S. Treasury market right now, still, even at these terms. If you think that the Fed is going to keep cutting and interest rates are going to go lower, you know, you can continue to see compression of the longer dated yields and a flattening of the curve out to the 10-year maturity at least. And if you think that inflation's not coming anywhere soon, or you think that the trade wars could get worse, or you have any of these other worries that are still hanging over investors' heads, then, you know, government bonds are still looking like an attractive option.
Paul Dobson, Bloomberg European Markets Managing Editor. Always good to have you on Bloomberg Daybreak. Hope you enjoy the weekend. Taking a look at the 10-year Treasury yield, it's at 2.13% right now. Near a one-month high, the two-year, 1.86%. Futures moving higher as well on the equity markets, with S&P futures up 7.5 points, Dow futures up 89, and NASDAQ futures up 25.5. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on workers trying to make a living in an era of unprecedented change. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com for the global stories that matter most.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher as we close out a busy week, which saw both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and S&P 500 close at record highs following congressional testimony from Jerome Powell.
And those records, Karen, are holding despite new criticism leveled by President Trump against China. We get more from Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie in Beijing.
Trump hit out at Beijing in a tweet saying China was, quote, letting us down by not buying American agricultural products. The U.S. president insists the pledge was part of a deal he struck with China's leader Xi Jinping at the G20 summit last month. Beijing, though, has yet to confirm Trump's claim. Data shows China actually slowed its purchases of American agricultural products following the G20. In Beijing, Tom McKenzie, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Tom, thanks. And data out this morning show China's export growth slowed in June and imports shrank more than expected.
And we'll be getting another dose of U.S. inflation data at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Economists say the producer price index probably held steady last month. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dale Judice reports.
Bloomberg Economics says the strong dollar and falling energy costs will most likely restrain today's headline on June wholesale prices. Digging deeper into the report, look for rising service costs nudged higher by upward pressure from labor costs. On Thursday, government data showed core consumer prices posted the biggest increase in a year and a half on broad-based gains. Vinny Dow, Judice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. In Europe, Daimler shares are down almost 0.5%. The luxury automaker cut its profit outlook for the fourth time in just over a year.
There's a change at the top of Boeing's 737 program. Eric Lindblad, who leads the program, is retiring after only a year in the job. He's been dealing with the aftermath of those two fatal crashes of the 737 MAX and the plane's grounding.
And AB InBev's Asia unit is struggling to price its $9.8 billion Hong Kong IPO. Bloomberg News has learned it's weighing a number of options, including relaunching the offering at a later date with different terms.
Futures this morning are higher, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 7 points, Dow futures up 85, NASDAQ futures up 24. The DAX in Germany is up almost 0.1%, the CAC in Paris up 0.6%, the FTSE 100 is up 0.25%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 2.13%, yield on the 2-year 1.86%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.25% or 15 cents at $60.35. A barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.70 to $14.08.40 an ounce. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. It's 6:33 now on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. People along the Gulf Coast are making preparations for Tropical Storm Barry. The full impact of Barry, that's marching through the Gulf of Mexico toward the Louisiana coast, won't be known for several days. It may slow down and dump up to 25 inches of rain in parts of the region. A hurricane warning is in effect along the Louisiana coast, and forecasters say the storm could make landfall as a hurricane by early tomorrow. President Donald Trump has abandoned his controversial bid to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census. Instead, he is directing federal agencies to try to compile the information using existing databases.
It is essential that we have a clear breakdown of the number of citizens and non-citizens that make up the U.S. populations.
President Trump insisted he was not backing down, but the decision was a reversal after the Supreme Court blocked his effort to put the question on the census. Members of Immigration and Customs Enforcement plan to start immigration raids this weekend targeting undocumented immigrants in 10 cities. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi criticized the raid, saying an ICE deportation warrant is not the same as a search warrant.
If ICE agents don't have a warrant signed by a judge, a person may refuse to open the door and let them in.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
These are individuals who have crossed the border in recent years and either received a deportation order from a judge or failed to appear before court. This isn't just picking something out. We are a rule of law country, and this is following the rule of law.
Former Vice President Joe Biden still leads the Democratic primary field for the White House, but according to an NBC Wall Street Journal poll, he's hearing footsteps from Senator Elizabeth Warren. More from Bloomberg's Mark Mills.
Polling throughout the race has shown Biden with a sizable lead, but in recent weeks that edge has started to narrow. Biden now leads with 26%, followed by Warren with 19%. Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Bernie Sanders are tied with 13%. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg pulled in 7%. Biden remains the top choice for African-American voters as well as older Democrats and those who describe themselves as moderate or conservative. Warren performed the best with self-identified liberals and voters between the ages of 18 and 49. Mark Mills, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Report with Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. They say in sports, it's not how you start, but how you finish. Can the Yankees keep it up? The first-place Bombers host Toronto to kick off the second half tonight. With the addition of Edwin Encarnacion and Giancarlo Stanton a couple of weeks away, the future looks bright, says Aaron Judge.
We're only going to be adding more, you know, more pieces to us as the guys get healthy and, you know, once the trade deadline comes around. So we could only improve from here, but we just got to stay focused and let's continue to play our game.
Add that to the all-star success of Gary Sanchez and DJ LeMahieu, and the Yankees look to build upon their 6.5-game lead in the East. Domingo Herman hosts Aaron Sanchez. The Mets, they head south to face Miami this weekend. Caleb Smith hosting lefty Jason Vargas. New York trying to ride the wave that is Pete Alonso as a rookie all-star is this year's Home Run Derby champion. Speaking of champions, it's on to the final for Serena Williams at Wimbledon. Quite a whirlwind to get back on top of the tennis world after taking time off to conquer motherhood.
I don't know. I was thinking about it. I've been to a lot of semis and finals since I came back from the baby. So if I could just get some matches, I could play well here. And I did. So I am.
She'll meet former world number one Simona Halep in Saturday's final. World number one Novak Djokovic battles Spain's Roberto Bautista Agut at 8 Eastern for a spot in Sunday's final. Then it's Roger and Rafi as Federer clashes with Nadal at 10:30 Eastern. In NBA, a big trade out west. Russell Westbrook reunited with James Harden as he's dealt from OKC to Houston in exchange for Chris Paul and draft picks. And the Knicks have $5 million left under the cap after the signing of Marcus Morris. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Thanks, Rob. 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
America's immigration policies are broken, and there's little sign in Washington of a bipartisan desire to fix them. Donald Trump rages on about the crisis at the border, but has failed to come up with plans that would end it. When it comes to effective proposals, Democrats haven't been much better. Both parties need to ask three questions. First, what does the U.S. owe refugees and asylum seekers desperate for a safe haven? Second, how many immigrants and what kind does the U.S. need to strengthen its economy? And third, how should the country resolve the status of the 10.5 million undocumented immigrants already within its borders? While Trump is just plain wrong on immigration, many Democrats aren't grappling honestly with the issues. Vague calls for reform aren't enough. Enough posturing. Immigration poses hard questions, and demands straight answers. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. 6:38 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
Dozens of new solar and wind projects are sprouting up on tribal lands across the U.S. as Native Americans seek new ways to boost their economies beyond casinos and untaxed cigarettes. In the fall, Wearsall Solar expects to start building a 110-megawatt solar project on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. And last month, the Moapa River Indian Reservation in Nevada was announced as the site for two solar arrays expected to produce 500 megawatts of electricity, enough to power 180,000 homes. They already have a prominent customer, NV Energy, a utility owned by Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. In 2018, the U.S. handed out $6.5 million in grants to 11 tribal communities seeking to develop solar or wind power in eight states. Henry Redcloud considers it a return to nature. He's a member of the Oglala Lakota Nation and says the native way of life is based around the sun, and this is using the old ways to become sustainable. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Thanks, Bob. And some other stories we're watching. Global shipments of personal computers rose 1.5% in the second quarter. The increase was fueled by businesses upgrading to the latest Windows software from Microsoft. China's Lenovo Group held the number one spot over U.S. rival HP. Nike is going ahead with a new factory in Arizona despite the flap over that so-called Betsy Ross shoe. Nike says the plant in a Phoenix suburb will generate more than 500 jobs. Earlier, Arizona's governor, Doug Ducey, had moved to rescind $1 million in incentives for Nike to build that factory. And the bankrupt California utility PG&E wants to be able to issue tax-exempt bonds to help pay wildfire claims. Bloomberg News has learned the company's pushing state lawmakers to introduce legislation next month. PG&E is working on a $31 billion restructuring plan. S&P futures 7.5 points higher right now. Dow futures up 92 points and NASDAQ futures up 24. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up to 6:41 on Wall Street, President Trump backs off on the census and goes after big tech. We'll check in on what's happening in the nation's capital with GOP strategist Matt Gorman of Targeted Victory. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is 6:47 on Wall Street. Futures are moving higher. We go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bailey Lipschultz. Bailey, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. As you said, futures are moving higher after the Dow and S&P closed at records on Thursday. The Dow is up 100 points, S&P higher by 7, with the NASDAQ gaining 25 points. U.S. 10-year yield is at 2.14%. Shanghai rose 0.4% overnight, and European markets are trading higher, led by gains in France. Back in the U.S. on the economic front, at 8:30, PPI, final demand, and food and energy numbers. After the bell last night, Illumina prelim revenue missed estimates and management cut full-year guidance. Shares are down 17% in the pre-market. And in other news, Volkswagen is said to invest in Ford's autonomous car partner Argo AI at a value of $7 billion. In deal news, Colgate to buy French company Filgora's skincare business for about $1.7 billion, and AB InBev's Asia unit is said to be struggling to price its Hong Kong IPO. Wrapping things up, Citi upgraded Morgan Stanley to buy and cut Wells Fargo to neutral ahead of earnings next week. Illumina was cut to underperform from buy at B of A, and Altria upgraded to buy over at Goldman Sachs. Live from the First Word breaking news desk, I'm Bailey Lipschultz. Karen.
All right, Bailey, thank you. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Donald Trump has declared a federal declaration of emergency for Louisiana ahead of Tropical Storm Barry. It's expected to make landfall late tonight or early Saturday along the state's Gulf Coast. After a legal defeat at the U.S. Supreme Court over including a citizenship question on the 2020 census, President Trump issued an executive order that the Commerce Department obtain an estimate of U.S. citizenship through government data. Lawyers for House Democrats are looking at a New York law that would give them a route to access President Trump's state tax returns. At Wimbledon, Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer will go at it in today's semifinals. Novak Djokovic faces Roberto Bautista Agut. Serena Williams and Simona Halep will face each other in the women's final tomorrow. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg, Wanted. A new part owner for the Oklahoma City Thunder, one of the more successful small market NBA teams. Now, it's a bit of a fixer-upper. No more Russell Westbrook, who was just traded, but just right for someone looking for a cozy team. People familiar with the matter say a 22% stake is available. Nathan, we can do this.
Yeah.
It's difficult to pinpoint a value for the stake, which comes with voting rights but few other perks. Nathan Forbes says the team is worth about $1.5 billion.
Well, I like that you framed this as a real estate agent, given you're the Bloomberg Business of Sports guy. Do you get a stake in the Thunder, Michael?
If you have the 22% to buy it, we can put our money together.
Oh, just dig around in the couch. Why not?
Yeah, a couple of old coupons. We're all set. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter.
High-issue coupons, for sure.
Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
I still can't believe they let KD go. All right, thanks, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. We're at 6:50 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include President Trump backing off the fight to add a citizenship question to the census. President warning Facebook over its plan to create a digital currency. And Joe Biden holding on to his lead in the Democratic presidential race with Elizabeth Warren gaining ground in the latest poll. For more on what's happening in the nation's capital, we're joined in our Bloomberg 99.1 Washington studios by Republican strategist Matt Gorman, vice president of Targeted Victory and a veteran of the Mitt Romney and Jeb Bush presidential campaigns. Thanks so much for being with us this morning, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'll throw in $3 for the Thunder.
Every little bit helps. Thanks for that. Now, I want to ask you about the president's move on the citizenship question, essentially moving away. Did he just announce defeat here?
This is fascinating to me. This is one of the few times he's really backed away, and he's done it publicly on something like this. You can count on one hand the times he's done something like this. And the Republicans I've talked to and read in a few stories, they range from disappointed to, I would say, bordering on angry. I think a lot of them put a lot of skin in the game to get this question on the census. And so they're now going to be a little more reticent to have some of these fights. Especially going into 2020 when they need to be engaged and need to be fired up.
Where are you on this as a Republican strategist?
Look, I look at it from two perspectives, right? Like, do we want to have this fight consume Washington over the next year as we try and get ourselves and ready for 2020? Or do we want to kind of do it the way it's always done? And look, both areas have their pros and cons when it comes to the census. And more importantly, I worked at the NRCC, which handles House races. This is going to draw the lines for the next 10 years, essentially, for congressional districts. So and politically, that's, I think, what everybody's kind of focusing on. And that's what I think the end game was for Republicans to just overall. We're very, very concerned about how we draw those lines and what voters we're putting in what districts.
In terms of the fights coming in the future here, as you alluded to, what fights are you looking at? I would imagine you're thinking immigration, as that has been the focus of this president for so long. Is there a concern among Republicans that he might back off on his immigration policies?
You know, I don't think so, because that is the one issue that really riles up his base. And it's something that he cannot back away from, especially as he's trying to consolidate his base in advance of 2020. One of the controversies and fights I'm looking at in the months to come is the fight over the budget and the fight over the debt ceiling. There's been talk now the debt ceiling is going to be hit sometime in early to mid-September. Congress goes away for August for recess. They come back just before the debt ceiling expires. So, as you know, Congress is pretty productive, gets a lot done, and usually gets it done very early, you know?
Yeah,
very, very, very on top of everything.
Yeah.
So that is something that's going to be a big fight. And more importantly, with this Ocasio-Cortez-Pelosi fight, I think you're seeing the makings of a Freedom Caucus on the Democratic side. It's been in the works for, I think, a long time. They only need 18 votes to kill a bill. Republicans needed a little more. We needed somewhere in the 20s. So 18 votes can be had very quickly. If she needs to watch, she being Nancy Pelosi, her left flank, and keep them on board to get some of these bills through the House. But you got Mitch McConnell in the Senate. You have Donald Trump in the White House. Trump has been somewhat inconsistent in how he signs these budget bills. Back in 2018, he signed it reluctantly. But as we know, in late 2018, he shut the government down over it. So that's something to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the fissure that we are starting to see on the Democratic side between Speaker Pelosi and that group of four led, I think many would argue, by New York's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. When you talk about the idea of something parallel to a Freedom Caucus on the Democratic side, does that give Republicans sort of an advantage to look for?
Here's the funny thing about that. You know, I think AOC has essentially become their next Republican boogeyman. You're going to see her in tons of ads next year for congressional candidates, whether they be even not running in the House. They could be running in the Senate. However, in a weird way, this might actually make Nancy Pelosi more popular, because you look at who the alternative was is now, it's Pelosi versus AOC, and Pelosi looks a little more moderate, which is very different than it was in the past. Again, when I ran House campaigns back in 2014 and in 2018, Pelosi was the most hated politician of both parties, and that includes Trump, includes McConnell, includes everybody. So it's a little bit of a paradigm shift right there. And one of the big attacks Republicans were going to use against Democrats, moderate ones that won in 2020, was that many of them flipped. They vowed to not support Pelosi for Speaker and then did. If Pelosi's numbers go up, that's a harder case to make. But I still think you're going to see both Pelosi, but especially AOC, in a lot of Republican ads.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see whether that plays out in the Democratic presidential race as well. Matt Gorman, Vice President of Targeted Victory, a veteran of the Romney and Bush presidential campaigns. Thanks so much for being here. Really appreciate it. 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Ramesh Panuru, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Republicans are backing a lawsuit to nullify Obamacare. They've done little to prepare for the possibility that they will succeed. If they do, people who now buy insurance on Obamacare's exchanges would no longer have tax benefits to make that insurance affordable. Insurers would again be able to discriminate against those with pre-existing conditions. State budgets would be thrown into turmoil as Medicaid payments from the federal government shrank. Democrats would quickly pass legislation through the House to reauthorize Obamacare on a firmer legal footing and challenge Republicans to agree. Republicans have not thought ahead to what their counteroffer would be. One option would be to pass a law that reauthorizes Obamacare, but also puts the Trump administration's regulatory changes to health care into permanent law. The result would be added stability instead of chaos. But a lot of Republicans would consider it a sellout. Politically, the best outcome for them is probably for judges to spare them from having to choose. I'm Ramesh Panuru. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Karen.
Thanks, Nathan. S&P futures are higher, up 6 points. Dow futures up 78. NASDAQ futures up 18. The DAX in Germany is little changed. 10-year Treasury up 2/32. Yield 2.12%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.85%. NYMEX crude oil up about 0.2% or 10 cents at $60.30 a barrel. The euro 1.1259 against the dollar. And Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.